From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, January 7th, 2020.
This Day in Maine is made possible by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And by Douglas Ridge, a new eco-conservation subdivision in Brunswick, dedicated to nature-centric sustainable home design. More at douglasridge.com.
Police say that blinding sunlight could be the cause of a 30-car chain reaction pileup in Carmel this morning that left several people injured and closed the northbound lanes of Interstate 95 for hours. Maine State Police say the glare would also have prevented other drivers from seeing what was ahead in time to stop. We'll have more on this story in a few minutes. Governor Janet Mills announced she will nominate four candidates to Maine judicial posts. Private attorney Catherine Connors of Kennebunk and Superior Court Justice Andrew Horton of Falmouth will be nominated to the Supreme Judicial Court. Mills will also tap District Court Judge Stephen Nelson of Holton and attorney Thomas McKeon of Falmouth for the Superior Court. And the nominees will need to be reviewed by the legislature's Judiciary Committee and confirmed by the Senate. Maine's been awarded $5 million in a federal grant to improve and expand access to care for mothers with opioid use disorder and their babies. Patty White has more.
Maine is one of 10 states to receive what's called the Maternal Opioid Misuse Model Grant, or MOM. The goal is to improve quality of care and reduce costs over a five-year period. The state's Department of Health and Human Services says it will collaborate with several hospitals and community health centers to create a system of care that will include a no-wrong-door model for screening, as well as enhanced home visiting and community supports. According to DHHS, in fiscal year 2018, the state received more than 900 reports of babies born exposed to substances, including opioids. Though the number is declining, it represents about 7% of all births. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And Maine Independent U.S. Senator Angus King says the president's decision to kill Iranian General Qasem Soleimani has already strengthened the Iranian regime.
2 weeks ago, there were protests against the regime. Now there are protests against us, massive protests. They've given the regime an outside target to divert from their sort of internal problems of the economy. We've given ISIS a new foothold in Iraq, as we've already done in Syria. We've alienated our European allies.
Senator King serves on the Senate Intelligence Committee and, speaking on CNN, said he was expecting a briefing today. In weather tonight, cloudy skies and light snow with lows in the high single digits to the low 20s. Tomorrow, occasional snow statewide with up to about 3 inches of accumulation and more in the mountains and down east. Very windy late with highs in the low 20s to the high 30s. This is Maine Public Radio. A former Maine attorney who was allegedly framed by police and later convicted of felony possession of 6 marijuana cigarettes more than 50 years ago has received a posthumous pardon from Governor Janet Mills. Donna Gellers was a fierce advocate and defender of Passamaquoddy tribal members. His legendary mistreatment by the state's judicial system has been the subject of extensive reporting by Colin Woodard in the Maine Sunday Telegram. And as Susan Sharon reports, a pardon was Gellers' dying wish.
Governor Mills says the posthumous pardon is believed to be the first in Maine history. Donald Gellers died in 2014 at the age of 78. Pardons, which officially forgive individuals for their crimes, are intended to be reserved for those who have done extraordinary things with their personal and professional lives, especially after their convictions. And in an emotional news conference, Mills, a former prosecutor and Maine Attorney General, says Gellers' lifetime record of doing good for others put him firmly in that category.
While this pardon cannot undo the many adverse consequences that this conviction had upon Mr. Gellers' life, it can bestow the formal forgiveness for his violation of law, and it can remove the stigma of that conviction.
Gellers was a young Jewish attorney from New York when he arrived in rural Washington County, Maine in the 1960s and set up a law office in Eastport. Within a few years, he'd made a name for himself as a champion for the Passamaquoddy tribe. He campaigned for civil rights, including recognition by the federal government, challenged abuses by police and child welfare agents, and sought justice for a tribal elder who was beaten to death by 5 white hunters from Massachusetts. He also became the catalyst for the historic 1980 land claims settlement that awarded Maine tribes $81.5 million in reparation for land that was taken from them.
I think without Don Jealous, we wouldn't have been able to have a voice.
Dwayne Toma is a member of the Passamaquoddy tribe who spoke on Geller's behalf at a hearing before the governor's pardon board in October.
We would have been basically under the entire control of the state government and federal government. So he really, really is instrumental in bringing attention to the rights that were being violated.
Geller's arrest in March 1968 took place just days after he returned from Massachusetts to file the original Indian land claims case. In his 29-part Maine Sunday Telegram series, Unsettled, Colin Woodard writes that Geller's had become a target well before that, but the lawsuit sealed his fate. He returned home one night to find several people in his house, including a state police detective posing as a Boston gangster. Woodard says it was part of an elaborate sting.
By the time Don Jellers returned to Eastport from filing the suit against, in effect, against Maine and in court in Boston, a command post had been set up for several days or maybe weeks by some accounts in Eastport, headed by an assistant attorney general, John Kelly, and including several state troopers.
Gellers and a housemate, Al Cox, were handcuffed and charged with felony possession of 6 marijuana cigarettes. Mills notes that even the chief of the Maine State Police said at the time that a felony charge for small personal possession was so severe it was difficult to get proper adjudication. Gellers was convicted of one of the 3 counts and sentenced to 2 to 4 years imprisonment, a sentence that was never pursued by the state. Gellers was also disbarred from practicing law in Maine. Meanwhile, his co-defendant was released on $500 bail.
I was surprised that the judge didn't throw out the conviction as a result of my testimony. And I thought that Geller's got a really raw deal.
Harvey Silverglate is a Boston-based attorney who says back in 1968, he was working on another case in Bangor when he ran into Assistant Attorney General John Kelly at the courthouse. They got to talking, went out for dinner, and Silverglate says Kelly confided to him the details of what was essentially a conspiracy to arrest Don Gellers.
He didn't tell me who had, at least I don't remember him telling me, who had engineered this plan, but they wanted to get rid of Don Gellers.
And Silverglate says the reason was that Gellers was becoming too effective a litigator for the Passamaquoddy tribe. Silverglate says he was surprised by the admission and later testified on Gellers' behalf during a motion for a new trial. Kelly, who is now a member of the governor's pardon board, has told Colin Woodard that he cannot recall such a discussion with Silverglate. Governor Mills declined to call what happened to Gellers a conspiracy, but she did say this.
Many have long claimed that a motivation to arrest Mr. Gellers was not just to enforce the state's criminal laws, but also to thwart his outspoken political and legal advocacy. Well, after reviewing the historic record of this case and all the documents we could find, I feel there's merit to that claim.
After his conviction, Gellers emigrated to Israel, where he served as an officer in the Israeli army. In 1977, he was admitted to practice law in Israel after a review of the circumstances surrounding his Maine conviction. He then studied to become a rabbi and later moved back to New York to teach in a synagogue. When he died in 2014, the Machias Valley News Observer wrote that few in Maine history have paid as high a price as Don Gellers for persevering against the highest odds to do the right thing in the pursuit of justice. Colin Woodard, who interviewed Gellers for his series, says it's a tragedy that he never lived to see his full pardon.
Don Gellers was somebody who was extremely passionate about, you know, truth and justice and confronting wrongdoing. And so I'm sure that this would have been very nice for him to have witnessed.
Attorney Robert Checkaway, who represented Gellers' family in the pardon process, said Gellers' wish for a pardon became his dying wish. In a written statement, Checkaway said he's grateful that the corrected historical record will now reflect that Don Gellers was a courageous advocate for civil rights and not an outlaw. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Police say that blinding sunlight might have been the cause of a 30-car chain reaction pileup on Interstate 95 in Carmel this morning that left several people injured and closed the northbound lanes of the highway for hours. Robbie Feinberg has more.
Maine State Police say the pileup occurred at around 7:45 Tuesday morning near mile marker 174 in Carmel, with the initial crash possibly caused by blinding sun. Quickly, other vehicles collided, about 30 in all. 10 more were involved in secondary crashes as traffic started to back up near the scene. Maine State Police Lieutenant Roderick Charette says a number of responders were brought in to help.
Multiple units from the State Police, Penobscot County Sheriff's Office, Warden Service, DOT, Area Ambulance and Fire Services, as well as almost every wrecker in the region, were involved in working to resolve this incident.
Well, the damage is to the whole freight side. It pushed the bumper in.
At a nearby Dysart's travel stop off of exit 174, Sid Bijou of Corinna points to a busted headlight and reservoir tank on his truck, which was damaged in the pileup. He says despite the blinding glare from the sun, he was able to come to a stop without crashing into the cars in front of him. But he says several cars behind him couldn't stop in time. They hit his truck and pushed it into a van.
It was like a chain reaction after that. People were just hitting people left and right behind me. I couldn't see, like, all I could see was vehicles stopped, but then I could just hear them hitting.
5 years ago, a pileup of more than 100 cars, believed to be the largest in Maine's history, occurred on a nearby section of I-95. The cause of that crash was attributed to slick weather conditions and excess speed. Maine State Police Sergeant Barry Meserve says, though he's not sure why, the stretch of the highway from Etna to Carmel does seem to freeze first.
Typically, when we have crashes and storms that come, that area seems to get the crashes first. So
while the cause of Tuesday's pileup is still under investigation, several officers and motorists say the blinding morning sun appeared to be a significant hazard. Police even shared an image from an officer's dash cam showing the sun directly above the horizon. Paul Merrill, a spokesperson for the Maine Department of Transportation, says his agency knows the stretch of highway near Carmel has had several high-profile crashes in recent years, but says their causes are all unrelated. And Merrill says over the next few months, the state will be setting up new intelligent weather stations along highways, including one in nearby Etna that will offer more up-to-date information on road conditions and alert drivers.
There are things we can't control, but even if we cannot control them, we can do our best to get out ahead of them or respond when something happens.
Officials at Northern Light Eastern Maine Medical Center in Bangor say they received 11 patients who were injured in the pileup. Two other motorists were sent to other area hospitals. EMMC says the majority of its patients had minor injuries, but one did have more extensive trauma that did not require surgery. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock for a conversation about Maine's marine environment and economy. I'm Nora Flaherty.